There's probably a little bit too much fuss made about scores.
I think I'm a farmer deep down at heart. I wanted a family endeavor.
It's not about what someone else says. It's not about what rating it got. It's about what you enjoy drinking.
Wine, to start with, is something that is social.
It's about networking. It's about calling up people and ask for advice. And everybody's willing to help out.
Consumer wants something that's uncomplicated about wine. Why do you want one more thing to worry about?
I would trade this for nothing. It is my life and it is my dream.
You know, you only get to make one wine a year. It's not very much. I've been making wine most of my adult life, you know. It's only 35 Cabernets. I don't think that's a lot. I'm up for more.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 65. In this program, we pay another visit to Tor Kenward of Tor Kenward Family Wines in St. Helena.
Tor Kenward is a great person to just sit and chat with. It's been 2 years, so this is our second visit to Tor's home in St. Helena to talk about Tor Kenward Family Wines. Family is big with Tor, especially as his daughter is getting married this year, and will celebrate with a wine made just for her. And if you're lucky enough to have sampled his wines, you know what a special bottle that'll be.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Tor, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
I'm starting the interval off. My mouth is full.
You're having a little Point Reyes tome.
And what am I drinking?
That is a Chardonnay that, for the bottle that I opened for you, it says Molly and Ian's Cuvée. It's a wedding cuvée. My daughter's getting married in a month. So.
Oh, congratulations.
But the wine is what, for the consumers out there, know it as, is our 2010 Torchiana Chardonnay. Comes from a vineyard in Carneros that a very good friend of mine, Larry Hyde, famous grower, introduced me to. I love his vineyard. I always wanted one particular block, which he said, it's yours, Tor, as soon as that other person drops it, which the other person will never drop it, not in my lifetime. So he says, I'll plant you a new piece next to Mark Humbert, which has been very successful for Mark. And in the meantime, I have a friend of mine that I gave all this early budwood to, it's almost 30 years ago now. My best budwood, he planted a vineyard. It only gets a ton, 2 tons an acre. But if you'd like to try it, he's looking for a new home for his fruit. So we tried it in 2005, loved it, and have been working with his vineyard since. So it's Steve Barasini's vineyard, Hyde Selection Cuttings, and Torchiana is the name that we give it usually.
It's very tasty. I like it quite a bit.
It's got a minerality to it, which I love. I like minerality more than I do the tropical fruit, you know, that sort of tutti frutti.
Yeah, where they get a little bit too heavy on the fruit. Something about like this, what I like about it, and I could tell just from drinking it here, is that sometimes whites, I can't go very long with them. I can't get into a second glass. And this is something that has a bit more of a robustness to it. It's got body, which I just seem to run into that with whites. You ever run into that yourself?
I love white wines that have good crispness to them. And I don't say that where it has to be acidic, but it needs to have, you know, some structure to it. And that structure is what I think, for me anyway, is what begs the second glass. When it's cumbersome, then you're not interested in the second glass anywhere near as much as you would be with. It's got a nice balance to it.
You know, it's not something that's going to wear you down.
Bingo, yeah.
I should probably say we are here at the home of Tor Kenward, Tor Kenward Family Wines. Thanks for having us back in again. It was 2 years ago that we were here last.
How time flies when you get to be an old man, an old winemaker.
Yeah, a little old winemaker, exactly.
Doesn't seem that long ago, but anyhow.
Not at all. So what's new? What's going on? Obviously, your daughter's getting married, which is nice.
Yeah, if you get to the family side of the business, that's certainly huge. I have a daughter and a son, and this obviously is a big deal in our life and hers. that's happening. My son, we're just talking about him. He's now working a production company because he loves film in San Francisco, and they seem to like him, so that's working well. And going back to the wine business, it's been immensely successful. We're mostly mailing list, as your audience might know, and we tend to sell out of the wines very quickly, so it's good. Part of the secret is not making a lot.
Of course, it's also being able to keep that company fluid, too, in the process, right?
Yes, yes. While you're building a company in the wine business, it does take a couple years where there's a lot going out and not a lot coming back in.
Well, what is that old saying about a small fortune and a large fortune and all that whole thing?
I know a lot of people that will say that is an absolute truth, which is the saying is simply the way to make a small fortune in the wine business is to invest a large fortune.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
We all have a large fortune laying around. Well, if you have to invest in a business, the wine business is a great one to get into as long as you have that passion for it.
You know, and I've been in the business now probably 37 years, taken early work, moved up here about 36 years ago. And I'm asked occasionally to consult for people getting into the business, or actually sometimes for people that have been in the business for a decade or two. And the advice that I always give them is, you better be very passionate about what you want if you want to get in the wine business. You better be willing, certainly the first decade or couple decades, to really put in some time. And that's where I see the big mistakes made, is that the ones getting in, they don't know the business all that well. They know they love wine. They want to see their name on a label, and they just don't want to put in the real time. It's sort of like, I'll do it on the weekend. You can't do that. You've really got to put in as much time as you've ever put in probably in your life to really do it right. So it's easy to work with clients once they've agreed that that's what they're willing to do. And then you can sort of step forward and say, I'll consult with you a little bit, get you started and move on. And usually it works if they're willing to put the time in.
Would you say a fair comparison or analogy, I should say, would be you're a parent. You've got two kids. I am two. I have one. Your business is your baby, and it has to be raised that way, just like those formative years where everything is so important. It's very comparable, wouldn't you say, as the years go by?
It's funny. I hadn't thought about it. Yeah, it's like raising a child. And the early years are very, very important. It's funny. It's how you get out of the chute in this business, which is the early years, which makes a big difference on how you're going to be perceived and how the next 10 years are going to go. If it's a wobbly start, it stays wobbly for a period of time.
Wobbly not good.
No, wobbly's not good in the wine business anyway. Wobbly can work for a few other businesses, but the wine business is not kind to wobbly.
No, and I think especially because these days there's so much more competition. I mean, obviously from when you started, both with your time at Behringer as well as your time, in your own label, I mean, you've seen a world of change.
Yes.
And far more competition than ever.
When I moved to the Napa Valley, there were less than 50 wineries. Now, this is 36 years ago. Now, I think in the Napa Valley Vintners Association alone, which is not all the wineries, just those that want to sign up and be part of the trade organization, and it's a good one, I believe there's over 600.
Wow, that's even, I was expecting you to say around 5, but...
No, I think there's 600 members now.
So it's grown even since we started getting involved with it.
Yeah, every month there's a notice from the Vintner Association, welcome our new members, boom, 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 boom. And it's certainly not an industry where it's suddenly, leveling or declining in any way, where you see less labels. It's an industry right now that continues to grow, more and more labels every single month, every single year. Obviously, there will be a point where that's going to have to, something will happen.
Dam's got to break somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it still dominated by family efforts, though, from what it's been known for that in the past?
Yeah, in Napa Valley, and that's where we are right now, and we're in the center of it, which is kind of an interesting, you're almost dead center right here, represents only 4% of the California wine industry.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Lots of people that'll be listening to this will go, I thought it was much larger than that. But it's 4% of the wine industry. In Napa Valley, most of the wineries if you want to take sheer numbers and do percentages, are family owned.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to see that.
Yeah, it is nice. I think when you move into other appellations, some other appellations are like that, you know, mostly family driven, small. But there are some appellations where I would say the Central Valley area where you'll have some very, very large wineries looking at the industry from another perspective, mm-hmm. which is more numbers than...
Different concept.
Different concept, yeah. Different business plan.
Mm-hmm. I'm step aside for one quick second. This cheese is really good. Boy, is it creamy. It has just got such a wonderful creaminess to it.
Yeah, well, that's it's a small little cheesemaker over in Marin area that is just... one of the top in California. They've won a lot of awards, national awards, too.
Well, there's so much similarity, wouldn't you say, between cheese making and wine making?
Cheese has really taken off the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you think that's maybe hand in hand?
Well, I think it's wine, it's cheese, it's restaurants, it's the vegetables. They're looking at more and more heirloom type of plantings now, from tomatoes to kale to whatever. So everything is getting, you know, how can we push it? How can we push it? How can we get better? How can we get more interest out there? And you get, in California, I think the climate is such that it really does invite that.
Mm.
I hope that stays that way
so
for a period of time.
Well, and also the concept of being local, fresh, not shipped.
Well, that farm to table, I think Chez Panisse started in 71. But I don't trust my memory all that much. But I think around 71. And that farm-to-table thing took off then. And I think it's hit a second phase now, where you have farm-to-table, but you also have much more creativity. Alice was pretty basic, delicious, phenomenal, still is. But you have people doing things now with cheese and chefs and stuff that they certainly weren't doing 10 years ago.
Not at all. Well, and as I've heard from many people in the business, a couple of vineyard managers in particular, where do you get your groceries from?
Yeah.
They don't come from a grocery store.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of farming around here, yeah.
You're always involved, at least from my point of view, in auction. And you've done Premier, you know, for the very brief period we've been involved. The charity thing's got to be not the easiest thing in the world for you to do, because I'm sure everybody's pulling on you in one direction or another to do this. How do you keep up with this?
Charity, wineries are asked a lot. So, yes, back when I worked for a much larger winery, you basically had to spell out exactly what you could do and couldn't do, or you couldn't communicate to all the people that wanted, you know, a bottle of wine here and a bottle of wine there. To answer your question, the Napa Valley Wine Auction, the dollars go to Napa Valley and the healthcare system. So it's pretty much a no-brainer, I think, for anybody that's in the wine business in Napa Valley to be involved in some way or another, because you are helping everybody that's working for you. You're helping their relatives. You're helping your family. And you're also helping yourself. I mean, it's just one big, huge, connective ball of tissue. So it's a no-brainer. The healthcare of Napa Valley extends itself and has been very proactive in taking care of the farm workers. I would say they're... be interesting if anybody gets back to me with another example, but I cannot think of another county where the farm workers are better taken care of than they are here. And that's with health care services, with low-income housing, pretty much bump, bump, bump. The community really gets behind it. So a huge amount of the dollars from the auction goes into taking care of a lot of people that can't afford health care. Premier Napa Valley is actually bricks and mortar, which is a little bit of a different thing, but that helps support the Vintners Association, which is really the catalyst right now behind the auction. They're the ones that run it, manage it, make it happen. They say we do it, But it's a pretty large organization now that that in my mind runs the auction. I was actually in the steering committee for the very first wine auction.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah.
What year was that again?
I want to say maybe 84. Okay. You know, it was a long time ago. And it was all volunteer. We didn't have Napa Valley Vintners Association, trade organization. It was all winery principals that would just donate their time and get things done. And there's a bunch of us, Bob Mondavi's the one that's quoted the most, but there's a bunch of us that felt that this would be a good thing. And it was a lot funkier back then than it is now.
Funky? How so?
Well, I remember I was in charge of the marketing and the PR for the first auction, and we just sort of all did it on the fly. Mm. We asked a famous British wine authority, Michael Broadbent, to come out and to help us auction off the wines. I think it was the first vintage of Bob Mondavi and Philippe Rothschild's Opus 1 that somebody bought 5 cases of for what we thought was a ridiculous amount of money. It was a couple $100,000, which was a lot of money.
Still is.
Still is.
Yeah. Yes.
And, you just don't look back. It just took off. Everybody wanted to come. So we've gone through a lot of evolutions on the wine auction since then. But for anybody that's come out and attended the wine auction, I've never heard anybody say anything other than that was one of the most memorable experiences in their life. It should be on everybody's that loves wine and food, should be on their bucket list if they haven't come.
Speaking as somebody who comes as media, I can't agree more, especially last year with the uniqueness of the event.
The uniqueness I think you're referring to is that we got a deluge.
The monsoon.
Yes, it was a monsoon. Except it was a cold rain. It wasn't a warm rain.
No, it was not a pleasant rain at all.
I spent some time in Vietnam, and those are warm rains.
Yeah, this was not.
This was.
I remember the sections between the tents where you could get a brief shower as you ran between them.
Well, the smart ones got their limos to go into Steve's Hardware.
I heard that there wasn't anything available.
Yeah, well, they cleaned it out. They cleaned out all the rubber boots at Steve's.
Maybe that made it just that much more fun and that much. And the irony was the previous year with the squirt guns, now that I think about it.
Because it was so hot.
Right.
Yeah. The squirt guns usually come out because it gets so hot.
Yeah.
So I've been in the Valley for every wine auction. I don't think I attended maybe 2-3 max out of all of them. And I, for the life of me, I can't remember a hard rain ever. So that was so odd. The thing that I loved, you could really sit down and eat and drink without heat or any other bother, you know, weather-wise. It was cool. A glass of Cabernet tasted fabulous.
Yeah. It was a great event. It was a lot of fun. I think maybe a little extra silliness because of the rain. It gave us everybody something to giggle about.
Yeah, I think at lunch my chair was sinking into the ground.
Yeah, it got happened with a few people. Yeah.
Yeah, the stilettos, though, were, I was listening to the radios because they were a lot of the volunteers trying to get the whole thing going. Huge volunteer effort here to make it all happen. Volunteers with the radio going, I think we have a stalled stiletto over there on, you know, bump, tent, bump. We need a rescue.
Bring in the chopper.
This is the end of part one of our visit with Tor Kenward of Tor Kenward Family Wines. You can download part two at lifebetweenthevines.com.